Let's call this meeting to order. And Representative Sundin, will you have you read the minutes of March 15th?
Mr. Chair, I think I'm responsible for 90% of those minutes from the last session, so I would move every truthful word of them.
I'm sure you're very familiar with that. Representative Sundin moves the minutes of March 15th. All approve that. Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say the same thing. Aye. Passes. Now we have House File 2381. Welcome to our committee.
And thank you, Mr. Chair.
Look forward to you telling us about this very important item.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I am excited to bring to this committee House File 2381, which is really, I think, a very good broadband bill. And we've got some numbers in here. We've got some policy, some transparency. And I guess, Mr. Chair, if you would want to maybe get the bill to how we want it or bring it into the proper form, I'll take your lead on that.
I would certainly want to hear, the members want to hear about your A1 amendment, DE1 amendment.
Okay. The DE1 amendment basically, members, is cleaning up all the original bill, so it's a delete all and brings everything to current standard. So what I'll do is I'll kind of just highlight that, and when it gets to maybe some other technical stuff, I can turn it over to Mr. Eloff possibly, but I think I can give you kind of a general tone of what the DE amendment does to our bill. Basically, my bill brings to light the hard work of the Broadband Advisory Committee that's been working so hard for the last several years. We want to recognize their state guidelines for speed goals. We want to make sure that's a part of this conversation today. Overall, this bill brings transparency to how we award the goals and the awards. How do we recognize last mile versus middle mile? What's different about this year that I guess than maybe in prior conversations regarding broadband is we have now federal dollars that are in Minnesota that we haven't seen before. And we need to recognize and watch how that money is being distributed as well. So I think some of this bill takes care of that language to recognize that we just don't want to give kind of an open-ended go ahead when there's already places that are moving forward with federal dollars. We need to make sure that we're communicating with those awards as well. Members, it also brings in focus the recognizing the unserved mission is to being still a priority than underserved. Our goal from the very beginning has been we have to reach the outside limits of Minnesota when it comes to broadband. So this bill still keeps that last mile very much in focus as our priority. However, we do recognize the underserved speed goals are still part of this process, and we support that. But we try to put some language in here that gives the Office of Broadband some guidance about how to make sure the unserved are still a priority. let's see here. For the most part, again, I think we can work through any questions that members have. I do know we have an amendment. I think that mostly covers, my appropriation was $35 million, but we'll have to talk about more of the policy stuff today. I also put money in this thing for some low-income households. That'll be a later conversation. But I think today's meeting and the conversation, because this is the first public hearing we're really having on broadband this session, is that we're starting the conversation now. I'm also very open to members' ideas, to stakeholders. I've been visiting with the Office of Broadband, with the League of Minnesota Cities. I've been visiting with small telco companies, a lot of people about how to make this bill as best it can be. It's not perfect yet, but we're going to work on that. And so I'm very open to suggestions, ideas, and when it makes its next stop, we want it to be even better. So today's conversation, Mr. Chair, members, is to start that journey, and we hope to get out of this session with a really good broadband bill that expands it in Minnesota.
As do I. And with that, I will move the author's amendment, the DE1 amendment, All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Say aye. Motion carried. Now we have the bill the way you want it. Yes.
I have some questions about the D1 amendments.
Go ahead. Love to have them.
Love to have them. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Baker, on line 2.13, you changed the language on the speeds to cite section 237.012 subdivision 1. And maybe staff or you can explain what the difference is.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mahoney. I think I'll refer to maybe Mr. Eloff for some description on that, if I could, please.
Mr. Eloff.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, the answer to your question is contained in Section 7 of the bill on page 4, which amends that subdivision and changes the goal from 10 to 20 megabits per second download speed to 25, and the upload speeds change from 5 to 10 to 3 megabits per second, reflecting the change in the Federal Communications Commission's definition of broadband made last year.
And Mr. Chair, I'm not a hardware, software, computer guy at all.
Explain what 25 and 3 is?
But I have heard this rumor that that is still relatively slow. So maybe staff, and I don't mean to bypass you at all, but this is the kind of stuff that staff probably spends more time reading about than you and I. So if they could tell me, the high speed, how high speed is 25 megabits per second up download and 3 megabits per second upload?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, I think maybe
compared to what we got in the Capitol, in the state office building. I wouldn't want to do the state Senate building, but maybe ours.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, I can't tell you the answer to that. But I think one thing that might help. I know there is information collected by a group called Connect Minnesota that tells us what speeds are available in different parts of the state. So we might be able to tell how this compares to what is available now. I don't know if there's anyone here from that organization with that information.
Well, if not, maybe they can come to the next committee, because I suspect this is heading towards the jobs and energy and the JECC, whatever, JEB. All right. Well, then that kind of gets to that. And then, Mr. Chair, I don't understand, if I might continue.
You continue.
Same page, 2.24. You get to the 30 days, the application must be submitted, publish the specific criteria. My understanding, that's on the department's website already. I believe that was in, that they've been doing that. Why are we now putting more, why are we cutting down more trees?
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mahoney. I think, again, this was more clarifying some language to make sure that this is really an important component. I do know that the folks that do apply for these grants now, they know the criteria. I think we just want to make it more clear in this bill. I don't know if it said anywhere else that it was 30 days in advance. I can't tell you exactly what component brought this particular language to 30 days. If it's less than that, that might be a question we could ask the Office of Broadband. They're probably here today, and that might be something to say, what is it now? If we can trim this out for later on, if the transparency is there, I'm more than willing to talk about cleaning that up. We don't want to take another tree down for sure, but I do want to make sure that transparency is very apparent on this, and that was the intent of that, Representative Mahoney.
Representative Mahoney.
And then on page 3, line 10, why are we putting each vendor's, the name of each vendor, and if in any way these proposals was altered based on the vendor's comments? did that come from yourself, from a advocacy group, or from the department?
Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, that's actually a great question, and the one part of the transparency that I like the best, but I also know it probably has some language we need to clean up a little bit more. It came from, over the summer, and visiting with different folks that have been wanting to apply for grants, or maybe didn't apply because they didn't feel that the openness of the office and how they were granting was as clear as it could have been. And also, how do we know we're not being as efficient with tax dollars as possible? So my intent here was to make sure that if Paul Bunyan or Arvig or Federated wanted to come to the table with an application, what we want to ask for is help us understand how you got to this. Did you use multiple vendors for your ditching and your splicing? Did you just use one vendor? Did you use how did you come up with the best plan? It's sort of like asking a little bit of an overview of how did you get to this point at the best possible outcome. And I think we're looking for more folks that want to bring more vendors to bidding processes so we can get the most competitive bids possible. That's the intent of that, Representative Mahoney.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, because I just thought you were trying to help everybody's competitor know what the other guy was talking paying for, and so they could take a better look and see how much they could undercut one guy versus the other guy or gal. And that's really what that looks like to me. It's how do I undercut the other person, the other contractor? And that would lend itself to not bidding on a particular project.
Representative Baker.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's part of the process I want to clean up. It's probably a little bit more open than it needs to be right now. We certainly don't want to open up sensitive private issues and bids, and that's not the intent of that. It's to maybe show how we can just bring as many vendors to the table, but make sure that we're actually talking to other vendors. So that's one of those, Representative Mahoney, that we can work on cleaning that up a little bit better so that it's very favorable for the applicants. So we want to make this better and easier. We don't want to make this difficult for them.
Well, I don't want to. I've got a bunch of other questions on this particular, so I don't want to take everybody's time up. I'll wait, let everybody else ask their questions, and if there's more time, I'll ask.
If you feel the urge, just raise your hand.
Yes, sir.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought maybe Representative Mahoney was just going to go through all of it, and I wouldn't have a chance to ask a question, so thank you for the opportunity.
I'm always a kind and considerate legislator, as everyone knows.
I agree.
If you can't say something nice, I'll just sit here. On my, you kind of skipped over a part, though, here. So I want to get to 2.10, underserved and unserved areas. And I'm really disappointed, actually, in what I see here, because we spent a ton of time over the last several years discussing these. And as far as I can tell, with the changes, you're actually going to make it harder rather than easier for cities to get coverage. And so we're lowering the standard to 10 down and 1 up. And so what happens then is medium-sized cities aren't going to have the opportunity. And when we started this discussion, it wasn't just about making sure everybody got internet. That's important, and high-speed internet. But it was making sure that the economic centers, which sometimes are medium-sized cities, are able to get the business and economic development out of running the fiber optic cable. And I think this is actually moving in a backwards direction and is going to have people in little itty-bitty, sparsely populated areas have internet, but the medium-sized city that's sort of their central hub for economics isn't going to be able to qualify. And I'm concerned about that. And there's hundreds of cities that'll be ineligible. There already are too few cities eligible, and this is going to make it even harder. So that's one of the two questions I had. And the second one I'll just throw in here, and I don't know anything about this. I don't know the details. I just know I received some comments about it, which is the right of first refusal, and that there's some real concern about that addition. And I don't know very much about it, so if you could touch on that too and explain to me why you've added it, that'd be helpful to me.
Sure.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Norton. Going to the I think the philosophy of certainly I think your question more so was underserved and unserved when you've got communities that are not getting the new state speed goals. What we want to make sure we do first, and I think, again, I've only been to one session prior to this one, and I think what I'm understanding is the intent of the broadband office was to get broadband to every corner of the state. And I think by doing so, if you are getting, again, what's now the federal standard with the CAF $2 is the 10-1 speed zone, it's still much better than folks that are getting nothing. And I think the intent of this is to make sure we don't lose that focus. Even though our state standards are higher than the federal standards, it doesn't take away, I don't believe, the need to keep customers that are between the 10-1 and the 25-3 zone. They should still be considered. Any municipality can certainly apply for these grants. It's not eliminating anybody from that process. But what it's doing is it's still putting a priority on the unserved because of CAF dollars are now in Minnesota. $85 million each year for the next 5 years. This is $500 million coming to Minnesota. I wish the broadband office could manage that whole works. I think we could do it a lot more efficiently and better. However, it's not that way. So we have to make sure that we, I think, reflect the new policy to reflect federal changes that have made a change in our plan. So I think that's maybe getting to that question there. When it comes to the incumbent first right of refusal, again, that sort of talks about this CAF II new world we're going to start living in that shows if you've got a broadband provider now in an area that's been making investments and they're planning on making investments, we just want to make sure that state award dollars aren't going to start competing with federal awarded dollars, so we don't want to start duplicating and overlapping comments or priorities or territories. So the language yet is a little bit, I think I see a couple words in there that can make it more user-friendly and more understandable. I think the intent is to make sure we don't, just because one company wants to come into an area, we have to recognize who's there, and if they want to take it on and they have a first right of refusal, if they are now going to commit to moving forward, it gives them that same window of time, 12 months to get moving, but it doesn't then allow state dollars or federal dollars to be duplicated in any way that that we wouldn't want to have done in rural Minnesota. That was the intent of that, okay. Representative Norton.
And Mr. Chair?
Representative Norton.
Just to follow up quickly, and I appreciate that answer. It's an area I really know almost nothing about, and so I'll need to read up on it a little bit in the coming weeks. But I'm thrilled that federal dollars are coming to the state of Minnesota and throughout the country. We need to get cable everywhere and high-speed cable, and high-speed internet. I'm thrilled about that. But I guess while I want to supplement and enhance what the federal government is offering, I think it doesn't have to be identical. We can have a slightly different focus, and our focus can be on economic development hubs and supplement what the feds are doing rather than narrow ours to match theirs. I really would like to just ask you to keep thinking about that a little bit, because we've had a lot of discussion over the last few years about this, and I thought we had finally come to a place that we, were agreeable, and now we're, and in fact, I had hoped we would go the other way, actually, and I just want to remind people that there seems to be some rumor out there that this is about Rochester, and we have cable in Rochester, so it has nothing to do with Rochester. It has to do with rural Minnesota outside the big cities, so there's no self-interest here in my concerns, but, and also, Mr. Chair, I think, before you move on, I just need to say the $35 million, I know we're not a budget committee, is woefully under what we've heard from the advocates and the communities, and I did go on your tour this summer, and I know how far it didn't go. I think what we're doing is the right thing, and I've been supportive of it from day one, but it's not going far enough. So in addition to, tightening the reins on who's going to get the cable or the internet, you're also not funding it, in my opinion, as much as we should and could. So I would also encourage you, and I know one of my colleagues has an amendment here, and we'll see how that goes, but as we move forward, I hope you'll consider expanding from 35 up closer to, I believe, the governor, and what I've heard from High Tech Association and others is closer to the $100 million.
Very well. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It always seems like I go after Representative Mahoney and Representative Norton, and they cover so much of mine. I believe Representative Mahoney and I are practically kindred spirits, so thank you for your comments. That didn't even get a laugh.
I'm refocusing my opinion of you as we speak.
You can applaud now, is what I'd say. No.
I'm waiting for that, the heart shot.
That's right. No, this is nothing real big. I just want clarification, Representative Baker, and just a couple things for right now. The first point is on sections 8 and H and I on the underserved and unserved areas. Since it makes reference to something else, I apologize if this is already it, but does it clarify one of the challenges that we're running into is there's a difference between the optimum speed of what a provider is carrying and what the actual speed is. Meaning, in my area, I actually do not, in my town, I don't even qualify for underserved, I don't believe. I can tell you that the real numbers that we have in my area are woefully inadequate. So, and my understanding is that the rating is determined by what they say that their optimum speed is, what they've been able to spike at one point or another. So my first question to you is does this clarify that at all? And if not, can we work on that a little bit?
Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair and Representative Miller, it does not really address that technical side of how to actually get the speeds to what you have been sort of promised. That isn't really covered here. I think part of the problem with that is, again, just the rural complexities of running line and running copper and using different forms of it to kind of deliver what they say they can. I do believe that companies, when they're saying it should be a 10-1 or whatever the speed goals that they're trying to tell you, is not purposefully misleading. But I think they are also knowing that if nobody else is around and on the internet at 3 o'clock in the morning, you're probably going to get that. And that might be the only time you get it. This bill really doesn't address a lot of that stuff. That might be something more so for, again, technology needs. But the more we get the broadband and the fiber in rural Minnesota, and as the technologies improve, I believe each year you're going to see significant improvements of, when they say a meg is a meg, it'll probably be a meg down the road. But this doesn't really clarify a lot of that stuff, Representative Miller.
One
more. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that actually segues into my, I'd like to talk to you, we can talk later about this, but as you say, you're massaging this into the future for future committee hearings. I have a concern, too, about the incumbents getting first right of refusal because of what we just addressed there. I think there's going to be a discouragement to people coming in and try to compete. I believe competition is good, and that wasn't the intent of what you did with the incumbents. I appreciate that, but one of the things that I understand is that because the incumbents, for example, they have a rating that fits certain things with their copper going up to the house, it discourages the competitiveness to make sure that they get their speeds up, and if they have first right of refusal, and maybe I'm misunderstanding how that's written here. When I hear first right of refusal, I hear they're going to say, yeah, we want that. But if they're already, their speeds aren't really what they're saying they are, and they have the first right of refusal to do a certain service area and stuff like that, we're kind of caught in that catch-22 that a lot of the small towns out in rural Minnesota are facing. So I know you understand that. I just kind of wanted to touch on that now, and I'd love to be able to talk to you about that more offline in the future. Thank you. And I'm done, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Very well. Representative Mahoney.
You know, the internet is wonderful. Somebody just passed along that the ESSO, the state office building for the House, has an 86 megabyte download and a 66 megabyte upload. So we're asking greater Minnesota to get by on significantly less. That's the problem that we have, and I do understand the desire for, how do I want to say this? I want people to understand that what we're offering to greater Minnesota with this bill, and unfortunately with the bills that went forward from the past, because we did have a lower number where this is not all that different. It's a bit different now, but we're serving greater Minnesota. We have an opportunity to really push this, you know, that $85 million that the feds are giving us, we shouldn't just use that to get internet. We should use it to get good internet. Because if you're a food processor trying to sell commodities, or buy commodities out in greater Minnesota, you need to have high-speed internet, and you have to have it really high-speed because you're tied in Chicago or to Minneapolis or any other commodity markets. Or if you're up on the range trying to sell iron ore, we're all trying to do that now. But that's where I'm kind of got my concern at the number. And I think we're going to get the bare bones, and our greater Minnesota communities need better than bare bones. The other thing is the internet's really good. They sent me a little note saying that this bill, and the way it's written, it's almost impossible for a city above 3,300 people to get a grant. So that does eliminate a whole bunch of them, and we need to figure that out if we can.
Thank you, Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have to take issue that there's no community here that is preventing an application to come forward of any size if their numbers are in line, if they want to put an application in. Again, we've seen underserved areas being granted already. I don't think that's going to stop. We just don't want to take our eye off the main focus at the end was supporting even a 10-1 speed, even though that's slower than our state standard right now. I've got folks in Candiota County that would absolutely be flipping happy if they could get 10-1 right now because they have nothing. They would be so happy. And I think what I'm hearing from all the providers, they're putting in better equipment, better future capabilities once they get a 10-1 out there, and then it'll be 25.3, and then it's going to be gigabytes and whatever else is next on the horizon. They're pretty smart private people that know how to get the equipment ready for future growth. And I think that this bill does nothing about eliminating folks from coming to apply for this. And I think that the more the better, because a lot of that scoring also depends on more hookups. That's a good thing. That's more economic development, which is I'm all about in greater Minnesota. So this bill should do that. And again, Mr. Chair, what we may want to do too is, I know there's an amendment, and I've got a number of testifiers here today too, so we want to, at least I don't want to run out of time. That's all.
The only thing he left out was satellite.
Well, that's Representative Baker, I think that's coming also, I think we're looking forward to that. And Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, I apologize for being late. My wife was down here for CPA days, and she insisted I go with her for lunch.
It's something that we got to take care of.
Representative Baker, I want to thank you for bringing this forward, and I like the idea that you have the unserved areas being the priority. For those of you who don't know, if you drive 32 miles from where we're sitting, the only type of internet access they have is dial-up. That's in Anoka County. And in my area right next to that, the dial-up doesn't even work hardly at all. And we have businesses trying to perform businesses there. That's where the problem is. We have too many unserved areas that we need to get to. As Ed mentioned about the federal grants that are coming, I think it's good. I believe it's good to have that situation where we have all this federal money coming in, but we should not be paying for the areas that federal money is coming in because we cannot even. This bill does not provide the same service. Under the federal grants, they have to provide a much higher and faster speed than what this bill does. It doesn't slow it down because they have it. They have to run at the federal level because it's a federal grant. And it's combined, as Representative Baker said, about close to $500 million over 5 years. That's going to help a lot. But this bill will help those areas that are not in those areas. We have a few pockets here and there that have nothing that this bill will help get. And that's what we need to get to, is make sure we have the entire state covered. So we have a lot of businesses in the rural areas in greater Minnesota that do not have any internet access at all right now.
Okay. Seeing no members have questions about the DE1 amendment, how about the A1 amendment? Representative Sundin, would you like to talk about the A1 amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to...
I do know that you know that we don't deal with money here, so...
Okay, I would like to move the A1 amendment, though, and...
We'll hear about it.
Okay, we could talk about the money issue as well, but in your packets, you'll see a letter from Mr. Eric Peterson of Esco, Minnesota, and in that letter, he outlines the difficulty that he's having doing business in that... not even that remote of a community, but rather than go through the letter, I wish it'd be my request that it be entered into the minutes for the day, and just in the interest of time.
So move. We'll do that.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess the reason I did bring this letter is just to point out that you could scratch out Eric Peterson at the bottom, and you could find dozens of people to sign on to this exact letter in any of your legislative districts, any of your counties, and I know that they'd be glad to do so. So this is a statewide issue that we're dealing with, and we should not take it lightly. What inspired my interest in the broadband expansions was a meeting that we had up in Pine City. It's not in my district, but I took a ride down there and sat in on a round table, and I was informed by the education professionals and the city mayor that every evening you can go to the library and see all these glowing cars out in the parking lot. These are kids doing their homework. These are small businesses trying to catch up with the duties of the day. And they have to connect somehow. The more we can do, the better job that we can do to connect the entire state of Minnesota, the better off our businesses are, the better off our students are. It's very, very clear to me. So I know enough about broadband technical issues to be dangerous. I do know that the investment of $100 million is a good start, and we should move forward with that. I'm glad that the opposing caucus realized that the 10.6 didn't quite do it last year, and $35 million is a minuscule start in my eyes, you know. So I think we could do a far better job for rural Minnesota. That said, I move the A1 amendment, and if you want to talk about the money issue, I guess we could do so, but I'd request a roll call vote.
Very well. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Sandin. I like certain components of this amendment, and I've had a chance to visit with Representative Sandin before today's hearing, and I guess... If it's the will of the chair, if we could open some of the comments up, we can go through some of his components that I actually would accept. He's got some good ideas here. I think it's something that we should include. Again, we won't talk about the money part of it, but if it's something we would want to do, I'm happy to discuss parts of it that would work and some parts that won't work. But I'd be happy to have that conversation with you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I know that.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Mahoney.
If we're going to vote on this, I'd like to ask for a roll call on the A1 amendment.
He already did, and,
oh, all right. Sorry.
And we accepted that. And
yeah, my neighbor here was reminiscing about our youth.
Well, I'm glad I didn't hear that discussion.
Good idea. <Yeah. laughs>
But anyway, right now the amendment is out of order. However, we wanted the amendment explained, and I want to hear what the thing is without the money. And I'd like to have a dialogue between the author and Representative Sundin and the rest of the committee. Not a dialogue, but... there are parts of your amendment that I wholeheartedly agree with. It's just that this is a policy committee, and we cannot have the money. So,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Norton. You going to help me with my dilemma?
Well, I am, and you're not going to like my advice. But I did, you know, after we talked and I saw that Representative Sundin had an amendment, I asked to go back and look at other bills over the last 2 years that we have moved amendments that had finances tied to them. And primarily the amendments have been keeping the amount the same, but just like today, having a delete all that does include money. But there is an instance in the past on workforce housing where we did allow changes in the finances. And so there is precedence in the committee. And I mean, I think it's really important that we have the discussion. I agree with you. But I think it's also important that we do the right thing for Greater Minnesota and get some more money in there if we can.
I probably can think of several issues that would do the same thing. However, this is not a funding year. This is a bonding year, and this is a policy committee, and we don't know if we're going to have a supplemental budget. And I think the only place that funding bills should go in the second year of the biennium is absolutely in the Finance Committee. And that's where we made our rule. We made it very clear to everyone. I have been fair, I believe, to everyone by doing that. But I think at the same time, there's a lot of thought put in this amendment and a lot of good information in this amendment. So I want to hear the structure of the amendment without the money. And I'd like to have the committee have the dialogue and be able to talk about your thoughts. So I don't know what to do. I'm not going to make the amendment out of order, although it would be appropriate. I'm going to allow Representative Sundin to discuss his amendment without the money, and we will not vote on the money part at all. Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I may challenge you on that thought at a little later, but I think we should get through this discussion. I agree with you 100%. I think it might be beneficial to call Dan Dorman down and have him handy to answer some of the technical questions and add to the discussion.
We certainly will ask them.
Okay. Dan Dorman's with the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, and if he's handy, he is.
Mr. Chair,
he's
oh, I'm sorry.
With us always. I would welcome former Representative Dorman's thoughts, but we have a lot of people in the audience that want to give us their thoughts too. So if you want to have him come up, I would certainly be glad to listen to him when we ask the public to come and give their thoughts, if that's all right with you.
Excellent, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative Miller, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As he's coming down, if I could just, I can't offer advice to you, but I guess I would ask Representative Sundin. I think we're having a good, healthy conversation here on a lot of subjects. I ask questions that aren't necessarily caucus-aligned sort of thing, and I really appreciate the candidness that we're having here. And I guess I appreciate the reason for a roll call, but it seems to be hovering around the dollar amount, and I just don't want to unnecessarily convolute things by doing that. So if you have a roll call, then I guess I would ask for a friendly amendment to pull the dollar amount off. If you pull the dollar amount off, I don't see the need for a roll call. But that's for you to decide because you asked for it, and I know that Representative Mahoney did. But I'm not comfortable. I'm very comfortable discussing a dollar amount, but I feel like it takes away from the point of what you're trying to do here. So I just ask that you'd maybe there is a time that you can do that and force me to take a vote on it. Okay. I agree. I want to be able to talk about this stuff. And if there's things in this amendment that I can support, I want to support it. But I don't want to talk about money right now. So that's just something to consider. Is all I'm asking. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Anybody else? We would like to have, if you feel Dorman being up here at the testifying table would help you discuss your amendment, so be it. We'll have him come up early. But I would like you to describe your amendment to us. And you can mention the amount, but it's not going to be voted on. Okay?
I'm sorry, I was distracted.
Yeah, he's distracted me too. But anyway, if you'd like to discuss your amendment at this time, and I don't care if you bring up the amount of money or not. We knowing that we are not going to take action on that amount of money, that's fine. If that's necessary to you. But you have many, many parts of your amendment I agree with. So I'd like to hear you describe your amendment. So we can carry that. Several of us are members of the next committee that this is, bill is going to go to. So we'd love to hear it. Representative Mahoney.
I don't know if it's a technical question I have on this particular amendment. But if someone could explain to me, starting on line page 1, line 26, continuing on page 2 through line 4, what the written statement to the city in which they are located, Atchafalaya, what does that exactly do under section 473? And you know, I had other things on my mind. I didn't get a chance to pull all the statute books and look through it. So whether it's Representative Sundin or staff, could they explain that? Or Mr. Dorman, former colleague, Mr. Dorman. I don't care who, but I'd like to understand what that means.
Representative Sundin, who would you like to have explain that?
Thank you, Mr.
Elon
Chair.
Or Dorman, or who?
I think Mr. Dorman would probably be most helpful at this point.
Welcome to our committee, Mr.
And Mr. Mitchell as well, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, I know that. Mm-hmm. Former Representative Dorman, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Dan Dorman. I'm the executive director of the Greater Minnesota Partnership, and I'm also representing our sister organization, the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. I'm trying to think of how I can word this and stay within the parameters of where I'm supposed to be, but we, both organizations, can't support the underlying bill for a couple reasons, and one of the reasons is corrected in the amendment, which is the funding level. So I'm not sure how I'm supposed to say that, Mr. Chair, and try to fit
so
in that.
Without the funding level, without the dollar amount, you can't talk.
Right. So okay. Without addressing that, I'll just address the non-funding stuff.
There you go.
The part of that. The amendment that we like, and starting with, I guess everyone's view of history is somewhat different, but you think back to when the responsibility for broadband got transferred to a deed from Commerce, it's primarily from an economic development standpoint. So our organization would agree with many of the comments that Representative Norton made. Our concern has been for the last several years of watching the funding allocation go out is what we noticed is that there were not a lot of or any small, medium, any size cities being funded, and we thought it was rather odd. So we worked with the maps, tried to figure that out, and so we got the database and started looking at who's in and who's out, and at a snapshot in time when that data was looked at, the vast majority of cities in greater Minnesota are excluded from possible funding. Doesn't mean they could be funded. So if you adopt this amendment, it doesn't mean that the underserved are somehow, or the unserved are going to be forgotten. They still can compete. This would just allow more people in Minnesota to actually apply. The way we interpret the data is that right now, the largest city is 3,300. Cities over that are excluded, but it isn't the population. It's where you draw the line of what is underserved. And with the current definition of underserved, about 82% of greater Minnesota residents are excluded from funding. So you start with that, and you've excluded so many people already. And we don't think that's where we ought to take this. So what the amendment that you have before you would do is open this up and let many more people in greater Minnesota qualify for possible funding. It's still they have to go through the application process. They would then have to be awarded, but they aren't excluding anybody. It just gives more people an opportunity to actually be included in the funding. We do have concerns about other parts of the original bill, but we can talk about those, I guess, later. But we really are pushing for redefinition of the term underserved. And I guess it is, you know, depending on where you look at it. But in this bill, the amendment would move it to 100 megabit up and download. If you don't have that, if you don't have that high speed availability, if you don't have similar service to what you have here in the state office building, you would then be able to at least apply. Doesn't mean you're going to be successful, but you could at least apply. Also gives some preference to cities that can demonstrate from an economic development purpose that they have business and industry in their community that is being held back by this. And there are numerous cases of that. And so the base, the amendment that you now have before you would correct that, I think, deficit in what we're currently talking about. So we think that the bar needs to be raised from where we're at today. The underlying bill goes the other way and fewer people would qualify. That's concerning to us, Mr. Chair. I think that's the best I can do without touching on the dollar amount, Mr. Chair, and I respect that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I'm getting a little concerned here because even though there's two issues here. One is whether we'll be able to vote on an amendment or not, and that's an issue that I think we need to talk about at some point because, to my knowledge, and I was looking through my packet, I don't see the rules in there, but I don't recall there being a rule in this committee that we couldn't do that. Now, if you can show me a copy of the rules that says that, I'm happy to, but there's none in my packet for whatever reason. And So I'm a little concerned about that, but aside from that, the other issue is that we can't even talk about it, and I'm a little concerned when I hear former Representative Dorman saying, I can't talk about that. Well, this is a committee that we talk about lots of things, and the fact that people like or don't like the dollar amount, whether you all vote on it or not, I hope we can talk about it. You know, and I understand that there's some concern, and maybe some people haven't made up their mind whether they want to support this ultimately or not, but I think we do have to discuss not just the policy, or at least allow the discussion in this committee about whether we think this policy with that dollar amount is appropriate. So I just have to say that. Like I said, I'm concerned at the testimony table when people are feeling like they have to not say their piece from their organization's perspective because they're afraid to talk about a dollar amount. And that, you know, whether we vote on it or not, I hope you'll rule that that's at least in order.
I think what I'm about ready to do is I'm going to rule this amendment out of order, and we'll look forward probably to having it in the next committee. And with that, I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to hear some of the substance of the things, but evidently with several people in this committee and testifiers, that's not possible. So I will rule this amendment out of order. And Representative Sundin.
Mr. Chairman, I'm disappointed to hear that. Not surprised, but disappointed.
I'm disappointed to say it.
But I'm going to appeal the ruling of the chair, and I'd like a roll call vote on that.
Very well. You can't appeal the ruling of the chair in this instance.
And Mr. Chair, I'm going to step up here and just say that I agree, and I understand what Representative Sundin wants to do, which is to really say, you know, we object strongly to the, you know, inability to have a robust discussion and to vote on an amendment that at least a member on my side, not maybe even on your side, feels strongly about, which is that this doesn't go far enough. But I just want to say this is I've had this happen in one other committee at where the rules are made on the fly, if you will, and that members come in without that understanding. And you are the chair, and you do get to make that rule, but I just want to be on record that I, for one, and I think certainly my author of the amendment and my members just are on record of being very disappointed in objecting to this.
Representative Norton, I also am disappointed that somebody can't discuss the parts of this amendment without mentioning money. It is not on the fly. I have discussed the fact with you and with the whole committee that we will not talk about finance things in a policy committee in a year that funding isn't this is not a funding year. It's that simple. And if that is not possible to do it, then I have to rule it out of order, and I have the purview to do that without a vote of anything.
And Mr. Chair, I agree that you do have the purview. As I said, I've seen this done before, and I'm disappointed, but I will give you your due as chair that you do get to make that decision.
And I think Representative Sundin knows that I feel disappointed. So with that...
And Mr. Chair, I'm not...
Okay. Representative Norton.
Thank you. And I just... I want to say, I hear what you're saying. I guess I'm a little incredulous because it's surprising to me that we can't talk about this because it's not a budget year. Because I strongly suspect that at the end of the year, somewhere, there will be a bill that will spend money. And I'm pretty sure you probably think that's the case, too. And this is one of the most important issues for many people in the state of Minnesota, broadband. It certainly, I hear it all the time. And obviously, the author agrees. And I think, in these committees where this bill comes up, to not be able to put this on the table with a really strong dollar amount as part of what potentially will be a budget bill is really unfortunate. And I understand... That you're going to rule the way you are, but I suspect there will be a budget bill, and I suspect that there will be broadband in that budget bill, and I'm going to be really disappointed if, I don't serve on the Jobs Committee. This is my opportunity, even if I can't vote, and the author doesn't want to take up the $100 million, this is my opportunity to tell the world and my members and my constituents that $35 million isn't enough and that I want it to change.
I don't disagree with anything you've said, and I would like to see more enough money to take care of the needs this bill has in it. And I also do not want to hamstring the finance committees when they get their targets, if they get one in the prospective supplementary budget, that we aren't going to make their decisions for them or where they spend them or anything like that, and we wouldn't. So I said we have many pressing issues in the state. We have transportation taxes and a million other things. And simply, this is a policy committee. Simply, as much as I would like to talk about it, we're unable to do that. So we will rule that out of order, and I hope it makes the next committee where it is appropriate to discuss that. And with that, Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I respectfully acknowledge the authority of the chair on this issue, but I'd like to just reach back and remind the chair and the vice chair of communication that they disseminated at the onset of this committee nine commandments or nine rules that they're to live by here, and we're doing a pretty good job of that so far. Under number four, the chair will determine time limits on debates, witnesses, and times allowed for bills and amendments. Nothing to do about the content of those amendments. Number five, all substantive amendments should be given to the committee by 5 p.m. These are the only two rules that we saw about amendments, and again, I'm disappointed that we can't get through this and have a substantive conversation about a very important topic. We did so earlier in my office with the author, and I hope this bill, as it moves forward, gets better and bigger.
There again, I'd like to remind everybody the Senate has zero in their bill. So with that, we will go back to discussing the DE1 amendment, and A1 amendment. Representative Mahoney, you had something to ask.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We are both past finance chairs of committees, and dollar figures come to committees on a regular basis, and they leave committee different than what was either up or down.
Chairman of the policy committee.
But my real question here is, are you implying that there will be no on-to-the-spending bills? Because as Representative Norton said, unlikely that's going to happen. I've been here just a few years longer, shorter than you, and I've never seen a non-budget year.
Representative Mahoney, neither have I.
But this
is not the committee that will spend the money. And your policy committee, when you're chairman of that, you didn't spend any money then either.
Well, that was the Bioscience Committee.
Well, I don't care what it was.
But I think actually the speaker allowed me at that time to keep pushing dollars up to Rick Covina just to irritate him. it's always fun to irritate him. But Mr. Chair, I want to echo my colleagues' concerns about that particular ruling on the fly, because I should stop looking at life through an economic development lens. But $35 million, it will help get a little bit better than dial-up in Greater Minnesota, and that's unfair to Greater Minnesota. And your bill is unfair to Greater Minnesota, and the dollar figure that you've been given to put into this bill is unfair to Greater Minnesota. You can't run a business on these numbers. You can't run a 500-person shop out in somewhere in, you know, Greater Minnesota. It's almost impossible to keep up with your orders, keep up with the blueprints that have to come in. You have to put in your download of your blueprint at 8 a.m. on Monday, and you probably won't get it done until 8 a.m. Tuesday morning at that level. So we're hamstringing our businesses in Greater Minnesota with this number. And this committee, I think Representative Norton and I and Representative Moran are the only urban legislators. So this doesn't really affect us. It affects everyone else on this particular committee when you hamstring Greater Minnesota's businesses. And I don't know what's changed this year, because in every other year we move money around and in one committee after another. But I will let this pass. But I want everyone to understand that the idea of not taking up the DE, the Sundin Amendment, hamstrings Greater Minnesota. And not voting on it hamstrings Greater Minnesota, and not putting this dollar figure in hamstrings Greater Minnesota. And I know I spent a year and a half, I spent 6 months listening to people tell me, as a Democrat, how I had stiffed Greater Minnesota.
Not me.
Well, it doesn't matter that you did. You only have one district, but I know an awful lot of other districts that we were told that Democrats screwed Greater Minnesota. Well, I think we've just seen the same thing happen one more time.
Okay. With that, we will take up the A2 amendment. Representative Baker.
A2 amendment.
Do you still want that amendment in your bill?
I'm not sure I know of an A2 amendment. Is there one here? Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, this would have been some of the language that, if accepted in the Sundin Amendment, would have worked too. But I'd like to enter the A2 Amendment, again, to clarify really some technical things. 1.5 really clears up the 2015 state goal by the year 2015. We need to update that to 2022. And also the effective date of this would be passed on the day it was enacted by the governor. So that's really this amendment, and I would enter that in as well.
With that, I'll move the A2 amendment. Any questions about the A2 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of the A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Amendment passes. And then we have a bunch of people who'd like to come down and testify. And we have some. I have a new list here. We have. Okay. The first on board is Craig Clark of Austin. He has to leave pretty soon, so.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to our committee. Give you.
Thank you. Chair and members, my name is Craig Clark, City Administrator for the City of Austin, and we appreciate your interest in extending quality broadband to service to Greater Minnesota. In Austin, we've been working on what's called Gig Austin, which will allow us working with our school district to promote an initiative that will allow us to address the high cost and poor quality service for the school district in and around Austin. But as we see the state initiative unfold, we see an alarming fact in that it's unfolding and seemingly missing an important component of economic development as it goes across Minnesota. Our centers of economic development, our cities, are largely excluded from the criteria when it's based on unserved rather than underserved area, with around 92% of residents in greater Minnesota cities not able to qualify for the program. We'd suggest this is an important opportunity for economic growth. From our numbers from the Office of Broadband, no city over 3,300 would qualify for the program, and when you look at economic development, those opportunities largely are going to happen in larger cities. I implore you that we can't miss this opportunity to capture the economic development component of broadband for greater Minnesota cities, and it's our time to get this right. Because of the standards, we're seeing instances where major cities are excluded, but the folks in the countryside are taken care of and leaving a donut hole for our cities and economic development criteria. While we appreciate the goal of border-to-border broadband, we comparably didn't see electricity extended to the countryside before we brought it to those living in the cities first. And I'd suggest, why should broadband be any different? We'd encourage you to optimize the state's investment for economic development and adjust the criteria to serve the communities like Austin and capture the increased economic growth that it can provide. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you for your testimony. Any questions for the testifier? Seeing none, thank you. Christy Westbrook, Chief Operating Officer of CTC Brainerd. Good to see you again.
Nice to see you. Good afternoon.
Hi.
It's great to see some...
Give your name for the record, so
sure.
100 years now we know you're here.
I'm Christy Westbrook. I'm the Chief Operating Officer of Consolidated Telecommunications Company, located in Brainerd, Minnesota. It's nice to see many of you today after your trip out to Brainerd this summer. Just to talk a little bit about the good work that has been done with the state broadband money in our area. In 2014, CTC was awarded $2 million border-to-border grant, matched by $2.22 million from CTC. The grant was used to service 247 unserved and 90 underserved premises in Crow Wing, Cass, Morrison, and Crow Wing counties. The project was shovel-ready, and we worked closely with Region 5 to make sure that that project was completed within the proper time frame. Along with several unserved residential establishments, this project was critical from a public safety perspective, with Fairview Township having no options for internet at their town hall, which is also the backup fire station for Pillager Fire and Rescue. Unfortunately, during July 2015, the lack of internet connectivity became a reality when a superstorm windstorm equivalent to a Category 1 hurricane tore through the Brainerd Lakes area, specifically harming Fairview Township. While law enforcement officers were able to communicate via 800 megahertz system, the township had no ability to share emergency information with residents. The township was only able to rely on phone once it was available, taking and receiving messages from 6:45 a.m. to 9:45 p.m., day after day, telling frantic residents what to do with storm debris, the dangers of the storm, and all the tree gypsies that were entering the area. The lack of broadband internet service caused the township to be chaotic and extremely stressful during this disaster. They needed broadband. During the time of the storm, our crews worked to install and lay framework for the township's future. The access they need in future emergency has been installed at 368 locations across Fairview and Fort Ripley. As I've stated in the past, the funding is real, and while I know we're not talking about specific dollars today, I think that we do need to focus on the fact that private investment is occurring based on these grants. I can honestly say that with the $2.8 million CTC has received in grants and the $3 million that we have put into those grants, I can confidently tell you that that money would not have been spent in Minnesota or in Region 5 without these grant fundings. I do want to take the time to tell you from personal experience, working with the Office of Broadband Development has been streamlined, efficient, effective, and the communication is far beyond what we expect working with them on these projects. At no time has the Office of Broadband slowed down the process of moving broadband forward in our view. It is critical that the definitions of under and unserved remain consistent with federal and state goals. Underserved at 25.3 and unserved at 10.1 is a sensible proposal for those residents and businesses that do not have broadband today. I thank you very much for your time. I thank you for your continued support of broadband. And I would also like to mention that I did bring a technical expert with me today if there are any technical questions about broadband platforms or anything that we can offer.
Any questions from the members for the testifier? Seeing none, thank you very much for your input. Sam Romaine from Wilmer. If I butchered your name, forgive me.
What's that?
If I butchered your name, forgive me.
You're all right.
We need you to try this too.
Oh, I didn't get you.
Here we go, baby.
Welcome to the committee. Give your name for the record, please.
Thank you. My first name is Sam, last name Romaine, from Wilmer, Minnesota. I work for a company called Haug Implement Company. We are a John Deere dealership who specializes in precision agronomy or precision ag. One of my main focuses is aerial imagery, which is kind of a fun topic. Some of you may have heard of the whole drone craze. We started off in drones and moved on to an aircraft, but more importantly is that we do this to provide our farmers with the information to make more money and also grow more food to feed the world, right? So currently we have roughly 7 billion people on this planet who we already struggle feeding, and by 2050 we'll have over 9.6 billion people. Now, I take imagery of our growers' fields and give them a map they can go online and download to make better decisions real time. Now, that would work great if they had the internet to do that, right? A lot of times my growers, they get the imagery back. I call them or text them and say, your imagery is available to download. And they go, okay, great. When I find time to go into town and go to the library or McDonald's to download my data, then I can use it. Well, what good does that do for them or anybody else who needs real-time data, right? So that's kind of some of the struggles we use or have seen in the countryside. As well as a business out of Wilmer here, we have a lot of trouble selling this new technology, and the adoption rates are fairly poor, because when I go to a farm and do a live demo of how imagery works and how they can download it, and I go through this and it doesn't work because the internet's not there, it's kind of a big upset, because you know, at my store in Wilmer where we have, you know, that 100 meg connection, it works great. But out, you know, 10 miles outside of town, they can't even look at the image online, much less download it. So those are some of the struggles that we come up with as a business here, and you know, we've talked about different speeds, and 25 meg would be fantastic. That would be huge. Even 10 meg would be an excellent start. I will say, I know our web portal, we require a minimum of a solid 5 meg connection just to view the data. That's just to look at it, not to download it. Now, if you want to download it in a reasonable time, you do. I would recommend at least a 10 for our industry. So,
you will. Any questions from the testifier? Seeing none, thank you very much. Appreciate you coming. And Travis Bonema? Bonema?
Bonema.
Bonema.
Bonema from Genio Turkey Store. Welcome to our committee. Give your name for the record so I can know how to pronounce it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Travis Bonema.
Bonema, great.
My name is Travis Bonema. I'm here representing Genio Turkey Store out in Wilmer, Minnesota. We employ about 7,000 employees. I'm going to read a brief statement about the challenges we have. Last year, our industry was hit hard by high-path avian influenza. We've worked on many different fronts since then to continue to make improvements in how we handle biosecurity. One area we have focused on is bringing all of our farms on the company network. Having our farms online allows our area supervisors and growers the ability to manage and monitor much of the farm activity remotely. We have also been installing video cameras at our farms, which allows us to see real-time how our flocks are doing. Our challenge in this project is having reliable high-speed internet, which is why I'm here today. Most of our sites are set up on DSL lines, which, as you know, is not high-speed internet. We've also had many sites where DSL wasn't even available. Including one site, we have two farms across the road from each other. One has DSL, but the service ends there. There's nothing available on the other side of the road. At the sites with no DSL, we've been installing the 4G setups using Verizon. This has provided better speed than the DSL, but now we're limited by how much data we can use at these sites. This becomes very problematic, especially when we're trying to view video because of the excessive amount of data that is consumed. When we are able to get true high-speed internet out to each of our farms, we will be able to better monitor and manage our farms as well as provide remote training. We will also be able to significantly reduce the amount of traffic between farms, decreasing potential cross-contamination, thereby improving biosecurity. High-speed internet services have become more than just a luxury. It is a utility that we expect and require. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any questions for this testifier, for the members? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. What's next? Donna? Monstra.
Boonstra.
We need to get to know these Dutch names better, Mr. Chair.
If you ain't Dutch, ain't much, homie. Welcome to our committee. Give your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Donna Boonstra. I serve on the Economic Development Board in Kanduay County and Wilmer, the city of Wilmer. And I am also a business owner in the country, who lives in the country, and I have an office in my home. And it's an interior design business, and I do a lot of my training on online. And when you want to watch a YouTube training video, and you watch that dial go round and round and round, and the training video is maybe 5 minutes, but it takes you 25 minutes to download it. And you keep going back and forth. So that's a frustration and efficiency in, as a business owner, it makes no sense. I'd like to share a couple other stories of folks in our community that have shared with Representative Baker and some of the other folks that have visited our community in the last year. There's a medical professional. He's a newcomer to the Wilmer Lakes area, and he purchased a house and a small piece of land and he planned to spend more time at home as he had in the past. Well, he quickly discovered that would not be the case as the internet access and speed issues were not adequate to conduct his charting from home, so he had to go somewhere else to do all of that. Another individual, he's an attorney in the Wilmer community. He reported that he would not have bought the home that he did had he known that he would only have access with his hotspot on his cell phone, and has to drive into Wilmer to do his work. So those are just a few of the stories.
Thank you very much. Any questions from the membership? Seeing none, we appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
And we have Dan Larson next. Okay. I met one. This one, huh? Welcome to the committee.
If it's okay, I'll bring Nate Burkett up with me.
Very well. Welcome, Nate.
Mr. Chair, members, Dan Larson, Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus, here today to speak on the bill. We appreciate Representative Baker's efforts and the committee's efforts to address the broadband access initiative. This is the first year we've put, as a Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus, the broadband issue and broadband access as a priority. So you heard from me a couple of days ago on a workforce and community development bill. This ties in very well with that bill. You can't have the kind of program that we were talking about a couple of days ago without the access to get there. So you've heard concerns raised many times. There are large areas of dry holes. They lack the resources. Not the resources or the intuition, but they lack the access to the marketplace of the World Wide Web. So that's, in effect, what drove our organizational support for this issue and rose it up on the priority list. I have Nate Burkett with me, Aiken County member, and I think he's going to speak today both for the Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus and the Association of Minnesota Counties.
Welcome to our committee. Nate, give your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nate Burkett, Aiken County Administrator. I'm not going to belabor the points as to how important broadband is to greater Minnesota. Couple specific things related to Aiken County. If you look at a lot of the maps, we happen to be that black hole. We are literally the most underserved or unserved county in the state of Minnesota. Not the greatest distinction to have. I have resorts on the north end of Mille Lacs Lake, which I'm also not going to talk too much about because I'm sure you've heard a little bit about that, that really want to have broadband access for people that come to visit their resort, but they can't. They can't provide good enough access, and they lose business because when people go out on trips nowadays, it seems like they want to be connected the whole time. A second thing is I have realtors starting to come to me now and saying, I've got a real problem selling houses. Aiken County also has the distinction of being the most aged county in the state. We're starting to have people who are leaving Aiken County for healthcare reasons. We're starting to see a demographic shift. And when I have realtors that can't sell houses because there isn't access to broadband at those homes, I have a real coming problem. Aiken County, MRCC, AMCC definitely supports the border-to-border broadband grant program. And one of the things that I'd like to say, even though I haven't been a recipient of the grant yet, we're hoping to be, I've worked with two counties in my career, specifically around broadband. And I found that one thing that really unites communities is an acknowledgement that broadband is exceptionally important. Cities, counties, townships, schools, business, nonprofits, individuals all come to the table and say, this is important to us. And I really encourage you, when you're making decisions on the policy level about how these grant funds can be dispersed, to think about the fact that we need to bring people together. And excluding certain entities or certain geographic areas on a really high level metric is probably not necessarily the best way to make the decision. There are lots and lots of moving parts, and I really encourage you to definitely move forward with this program and to support it long into the future.
Very well, thank you. Any questions for these testifiers? Yes, Representative Norton.
Sure. So we have $35 million in this bill. Would you support upping that amount, perhaps to say $100 million?
You know, I was here during the earlier portion that we were talking about that.
Good answer.
Simple answer is, I think part of the financing conversation that I heard before was related to CAF II funding that's coming through from the federal government. And I can tell you that federal financing isn't all created equal. And so if you're basing your number in any way on what that federal funding is going to do, I think you need to reevaluate. I can tell you in the northern part of Aiken County, the provider that works up there is doing a really great job. And they're using those dollars, and I think that we're going to have some movement in the right direction. But in other parts, there's a real problem. However, on the top of that list where it says where cities that would be excluded, the city of Aiken is excluded. And I would say you should come up to Aiken and I'll show you. They are definitely underserved, and if the city of Aiken and the county get together along with some other partners, we could probably use half of that $100 million that you've just suggested to make border-to-border Aiken County access a reality.
Hey, well, good question. Anyone else?
Good answer.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate it. And we have Connie Small. Welcome to our committee. Give your name for the record.
Good afternoon. I'm Connie Schmall. I represent the City of Willmar and Candiota County Economic Development Commission. Thank you for allowing me to come today, and thank you for your work here at the state offices. Thank you, Dave Baker. Our committee has been working for over 6 years to expand broadband in the rural areas of Candiota County. We have three cities that have pretty good internet access, cities of Willmar, Spicer, and New London. We have many rural businesses that are lacking internet completely or have very low speeds, and I'm highly in favor of both serving our unserved areas and our underserved areas. They're both very important, and with adequate funding, we can eventually, throughout the state of Minnesota, connect the entire state, and we need to do that. That's got to be a high priority. It is about economic development. It's about infrastructure that's needed, not only for businesses, but it's needed for health care. It's needed for law enforcement, for proper response, for social services, and for especially for our students who are taking their iPads home, having to do their homework, but can't connect to do it. I do want to just tell you one story about a business that is doing all he can to get internet speeds that are adequate to do his business. And this is where the underserved area really comes into play, too. 10 and 1 would be excellent for the unserved people. They would be very happy with that. But it's not adequate for some of our businesses. Bruce Verlink of Trax USA has tried many things in the past to get adequate internet speed for his rural lake loading business, which promotes product throughout the nation, and that product is Trax for your ATVs and for your snowmobiles and different things, but he does distribute that product throughout the nation. He opted for service with a DSL provider, and for years he stayed with an unsatisfactory service that gradually got better, and then last summer deteriorated to the point where it was unusable. And it's because of the number of people going on to the service and the number of units they have with DSL. He worked with another provider, a wireless provider, and he secured a new service that's relatively functional. He put up Zoom Tower and signed on to a 10 megabyte download service. Test speeds actually came in at 4.9 megabyte down and 2.7 up, and at sometimes 9 megabyte down and 3.0 up. He has days when the equipment outages, and that it happens with wireless, go out completely, so he had to keep his DSL services too. So he's paying $125 a month for one service and $93 for the other as a backup. And he's still not getting adequate internet speeds to do his business. So we do have to look at the unserved areas and the underserved areas and fund this adequately to do it all.
Any questions for this testifier? Seeing none, thank you very much. I happen to live in a place where I have that little blue donut too.
Yeah.
And it is frustrating. And my printer didn't work all summer long. So I know your pain. And Frontier assures me in 1917 we might get relief. But anyway, Laura Ziegler? And Kent Solem? Next? Are they still? Here they come. What? I wasn't even here then. I'm old. Now don't say anything now or I won't vote for you for mayor. Welcome to our committee. Give your name for the record, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Laura Ziegler with the League of Minnesota Cities. We represent over 830 cities in the state of Minnesota. And broadband continues to be a longstanding priority for our organization and our cities. And it is really an issue of equity and economic development, which you touched on in your discussion today. And so you may have received a letter that the League, as well as six other organizations, signed on to originally with the initial bill that was put forth. And with the adoption of the Delete All Amendment, we do have significant concerns with the change in eligibility, specifically defining the unserved as 10-1, as well as the incumbent provider's right of refusal. So those would be our top two concerns with the Delete All Amendment. I was able to speak with the author this morning, and I feel confident that we can come to a resolution with these two issues in the meantime. We certainly continue to support a significant investment in the border-to-border broadband development grant program to help communities. Thank you for your time.
I appreciate your testimony. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ken Solem with the Minnesota Association of Townships. Broadband I've been instructed that broadband is our code number one along with roads. We see it actually as kind of the same. We get the actual physical roads, and we get the roads to information, the roads to the future through the internet. We do need this package of some nature this session to keep the broadband effort alive. We're very grateful to the for introducing this bill. we have some concerns as well with the changes, maybe different slightly from the cities, but I think now we're going to fall apart. We want to stay in unison with each other here because it doesn't work if we're all fighting each other. But that said, I happen to live 3 miles out of downtown Minneapolis, in northeast Minneapolis, and I've got 20 download. I don't know what I've got upload because I don't upload anything to that. I've got 20 down. With that, we are feeding three streaming TVs a night plus my work internet, and we don't even blink. So it's hard for me to be able to go back to my members and say, well, we're going to take my 20 and make it 100, but you're going to stay at zero. So I don't think that's the intent. I don't think that's what anybody wants to do. But it's the devil's in the detail of how we actually work the definitions, and of course, the policy changes based on that which cannot be spoken of. But that definitely affects our ability to agree to any particular policy of can we actually meet the needs of both, which is what we have to strive for, absolutely. And with that, I'll be happy to stand for questions.
Any questions from members? Seeing,
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And this
Mr. Macklin.
Document prepared on cities ineligible for broadband grants. In my district, I see one city that is eligible. Can you explain that to me?
Yes, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Eklund, I did not prepare that document for today's hearing, but I would be more than happy to discuss that further with you.
All right, thank you.
Seeing no other questions, thank you for your testimony. Representative Keel, did you have a question, Lisa? Okay. With that, we have Representative Dorman, former Representative Dorman, and Chris Mitchell. I think you want to come up next. We didn't want to cut you out, good friend that you are. Representative Dan Dorman.
Thank you.
Your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Dan Dorman. I'm the Executive Director of Greater Minnesota Partnership. And at one time, Mr. Chair, your Vice Chair.
Absolutely.
And I'm happy to be back again before the committee. On behalf of both the Greater Minnesota Partnership and the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, we're unable to support this bill. We can't for several reasons, but I'll touch briefly on just a couple of them. And first of all, listening to the testimony, it's also compelling. And I think it really drives to the point that there's a dramatic need for better broadband throughout Greater Minnesota. And what we're trying to do is just make sure that more people are eligible for possible funding. Certainly does not mean that they're going to take money away from somebody that has no internet at the moment. And that's unfortunate that it seems to be the discussion of, we want this money, no, we want this money, and really we should all come up together. When you heard Mr. Clark from Austin talk about the great project they have that lift up the city of Austin and the townships around it, we think that's wonderful. One of the concerns we have, and you should have a document in your packet that looks something like this, and I would caution, take a look at that map and think about what the future might hold. Because some of the federal funding that has come in the past, not the new funding, but in the past, has had very similar requirements to the requirements of the Minnesota Broadband Fund. And so certain cities are excluded because they have what some people would say is adequate broadband. And in Lacapaire County, the county originally wanted to do a fiber project, fiber to the home for everybody. But in order to qualify for the federal funds, they had to exclude the county seat of Madison. So right now you have a donut hole sitting there. You still have Madison with substandard internet. You have everybody, all the other towns, all the other residents with fiber, but those poor folks in the county seat are sitting there still waiting to get upgraded. And so we're concerned that the without language changes to make sure that projects like that in Austin and others that can bring everybody up together, that we're going in the wrong direction. So we're certainly not opposed to folks out in the township or others being included. We're just saying let's bring everybody up. That's where I think we get the most strength. So that's kind of our concerns, Mr. Chair, are we think that there are too few people. We distributed that list of cities. I don't know who had that question, but I'd be happy to answer it. You should have a list of cities in by county that are eligible and a list that are ineligible. And that's give you some kind of a guideline as to what we're talking about. The reason we thought that was helpful, and maybe it's because I'm just a simple tire dealer from Albert Lee, I looked at all those maps and I was confused as heck. I said, what the heck's going on here? I don't get it. And so that I can understand. You put something like that out there, I could understand that. And I think that I would ask the representatives to take a peek at those two lists and think if you think those cities should be ineligible, then that's okay. That's a value decision you got to make. I'm saying more people should be eligible, but we certainly got to take care of the folks that Representative Johnson was talking about. Of course, we certainly should. So that's my part of the testimony, Mr. Chair. I'd sure be happy to answer any questions that members have, or Chris Mitchell is here with us, and he's got some other points, and we agree with what he's about to let you know, too.
Welcome to committee, Mr. Mitchell. Give your
Thank
name
you.
For the record.
Christopher Mitchell with the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. We're a 40-year-old nonprofit, and for the past 10 years, we've become experts in what local governments are doing around the country to build networks. We've spoken to groups in over 30 states in their hometowns, and started advising the White House occasionally and Federal Communications Commission. Happened to live in St. Paul, love the city. Really glad everyone's out here on a day when our brackets are getting broken. It's a testament to democracy. One of the things that I think is important, I think in terms of trade-offs and just about everything that we do, and I think it's an important discussion regarding whether inviting more investment into the core of these greater Minnesota towns to encourage economic development could result in less investment to homes that have nothing. And I think it's more complicated than the discussion has suggested thus far. In fact, when you invest in the cores as part of a project and you allow the office to do some blending, you make the project stronger financially, and there'll be more able to expand. Many of these groups, the co-ops in particular, have a tremendous drive to connect everyone. They're going to try and find ways of investing in their neighbors. If their costs are very high for them to build their networks and they can only build in the least served, highest cost areas, they will be able to invest less, is my fear. Whereas if they're able to blend that into areas that have a higher return, they can more rapidly expand. So we've seen this problem elsewhere, but the main thing that I wanted to touch on that I find very concerning is the right of first refusal. This is an aspect of law that we see in both Pennsylvania and Michigan, and it's led to lower levels of investment. And it's really a can of worms that you have to be aware of, because as discussed earlier in terms of a number of issues with technology, there's a lot of details that matter. And when you talk about the language that's in here right now, I'm deeply concerned, because it's not clear whether provider would have to guarantee that they were going to serve everyone. It's not clear that they would have to serve the entire community with 25x3, or if they were serving, you know, 80% or 60% of the city with 25x3. There's no pricing mechanism. And so we've seen instances in Pennsylvania in which providers might say, it's a very high cost, but we'll deliver that high quality service to you, therefore you cannot build it as a municipality. I think there's a lot of unintended consequences as a result of this. And I think it's a justified a fear in terms of a government body not wanting to disrespect the investments that have been made in the past. And I think the important thing to note is that Minnesota's telephone and cable companies have invested on par or more than we've seen in the rest of the nation. It's just simply a problem that is beyond their ability to solve. And I will say that in addition to that, we've rarely seen cities with local government officials that want to get involved in these kinds of projects, given how challenging they are, and in some cases the level of risk when they have so many other issues to deal with. So what I would say is that where cities are want to work on this, and where there is a demand for new providers, to me that suggests that the provider has not invested adequately, and their right of first refusal came when they were not offering the higher quality services that led their customers to be satisfied. The last item I wanted to note was just that regarding the speed goals, I think it's important to note that we're talking about networks that are going to be rolled out in the next 2 or 3 years. 10x1 is already outdated. If underserved is not below the state's target, I'm not really sure what underserved would be. So I would just encourage you to rethink that as you're considering this. Thank you.
Thank you. I agree with almost everything you said. With that, any questions for? Oh, Representative Lean, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Mitchell, I just have a question talking about the incumbent right of first refusal. Have you seen in other states where this policy has gone into place, the private sector basically coming in and say, okay, you know, we see that you're able to get funding from a public entity, and so now we're going to come through and provide that service at those upload-download speeds that are optimal?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, could you say, I wouldn't quite get the gist of your question. I want to make sure I answer it correctly.
repeat the question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Mitchell. I guess what I'm asking is, have policies where we're taking a look at incumbent right of refusal, have states where those policies have been enacted led to private sector development of high-speed internet access after the public entity that's applied for the grants gone through that application process?
Thank you. I wanted to, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I wanted to make sure that I understood that correctly. We have not seen an instance in which we have seen more investment in a state or local communities as a result of a right of first refusal, which from economic terms one would expect, because you're safer, you have less fear of competition or another choice entering the market. That said, there's still been investment in Pennsylvania and Michigan, so it's not like they stopped investing. But we've seen nothing to suggest that there would be more investment if there was less of a fear of a competitive entry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Mitchell. And in those states where you have seen some investment, I think you had mentioned Pennsylvania and Michigan, did those investments lead to improving speeds for internet access?
Well, what I was, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, what I was saying is that we have seen some investment. I would certainly want to be clear that we would not credit that to the lack of a right of first refusal, but rather that around the country we've seen investment just about everywhere to varying levels. And the investment for the most part in Pennsylvania in particular, I would say, has been lackluster, they would say, outside of the major core cities. And in fact, there's a major problem across what we might call Greater Pennsylvania, where I grew up. I grew up in Pennsylvania, so I'm familiar with it. And they're trying, you know, they're at their wit's end in some ways, and they unfortunately don't have the budget surpluses that Minnesota has to put toward it. So I've not seen a really, you know, any sort of policy solution. But I would say that in the states where we've seen increasing carve-outs for industry, we have seen that lead to the same level or less investment.
We have other.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so, Mr. Missel, just to follow up then, I think it's pretty safe to say that policies such as incumbent right of first refusal have not led to increased investments by the private sector, nor have they led to improved speeds and access of high-speed internet.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it's hard to imagine a situation in which a right of first refusal would lead to more investment off the bat, unless every city were to immediately spend the money to do the work to make a credible application that would then lead to a greater fear on the part of the incumbent. Although I would say there's no requirement in here that an incumbent would have to fulfill it. They would have to intend to. And I would not believe them to be deceptive, but investment plans change on a quarterly basis in some cases. I think the fear of that happening is that the cost of doing an investment of just the consulting work and the engineering study to put forth an application, to know that you're less likely to receive funding, the cities are not going to do that. Providers are not likely to touch these areas because of the uncertainty of dealing with this additional complication.
Thank you very much. Any other questions for these testifiers? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
We have one of my favorite people, former Speaker Kelleher, here. She'd like to have a few things to say, and I welcome her to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm here in my capacity as the chair of the Governor's Broadband Task Force, and first I want to thank Representative Baker for bringing forward this bill, and I want to thank all of you for your attention to this issue today. And I want to compliment you for this good start on the investment in broadband. I know this is the policy committee, but I want to highlight a couple of things. It is a good start on the investment in broadband. I do hope you'll go further in the investment on broadband. And I do also want to highlight that there is money put in the adoption side of broadband. And that's important for the entire state, because adoption is also an important issue. Adoption and cost, the cost of adoption is a major barrier. Today in the audience, we still have, I think, a few members of the Governor's Broadband Task Force. If you just raise your hand, there's a couple people left. They came with me today, but I think I've lost a number of them. They have been serving with me on the task force.
I think it's important to remind everyone today what the goal of the task force is, what our work is. Our work is to make sure that every home and business in Minnesota is connected border to border. Because there's a lot of talk today about different areas of Minnesota getting connected and how fast to connect Minnesotans. But ultimately, the governor's order tasked us with putting together a plan that connects all Minnesotans border to border. And that's at the heart of our work. And we recommended to you in this report that we delivered a little while ago, a couple weeks ago, some new updated speed goals, and I'm going to talk about speed goals right at the end because I think it's really important. There's a lot of chatter about speed goals today, and that is a policy issue. But it's really important to think about what is happening when you connect all Minnesotans. And so, first of all, I want to address this issue of the CAF $2 coming into the state. And we have a whole section on page 29 and 30 of this report that I would highly recommend you review. Because CAF $2 and the federal issues around CAF $2 are complex. And when the feds put into place this 10 and 1 speed around CAF $2, that is inconsistent with how the federal, with the FCC's definition of high speed broadband, which is actually 25 and 3. Inconsistency, who thought? But that is actually what we recommend to you, 25 and 3, as your state definition of broadband going forward. And that is why we peg the underserved numbers going forward to that number. And I just want to be very clear about that today, that it can get super confusing fast around this 10-1 number. And we think it's important to acknowledge the good work that our incumbent providers are doing and the fact that they applied for the CAF $2 and that all of this money is going to come into the state. But it is complex in who gets served by CAF $2 and who doesn't get served by CAF $2. One thing you may want to look at going forward is how to maximize the speeds of CAF 2 by being able to maybe layer some of the money, if you can get that dollar amount up there, to be able to layer dollars on top of dollars to get those speed goals up there for Minnesotans. But right now, I would just caution you to be very careful about that. So congratulations, this is a good start. The other thing that maybe is missing from this bill right now is what we call the long-range goal to make sure that all Minnesotans have at least one provider that can provide to them 10 years out the 100 by 20 goal, 100 megabits by 20 100 megabits download by 20 megabits upload 10 years out, one provider being able to provide that in their area. And that's by 2026. So I think that the best thing to do is by end by telling you a story. It's St. Patrick's Day, and it's a storytelling day. And so the story is the story of the three bears and speed goals. So the speed goal is always something that, you know, some people will always want more. And some will want too little. And sometimes there maybe be just enough. So the 100 by 100 symmetrical. Now let's think about this. You have limited public dollars here that's going to be matched by private dollars to leverage something wonderful in the state for Minnesotans. And 100 by 100 symmetrical, we tried to look at that in the task force. The task force did not recommend that to the governor or to you. And there's a reason for it. Think about it. Think about the most farthest remote farm or home and to provide that 100 by 100 symmetrical out there. I would call that the three bears, like the too big option for Minnesota. And then we have 10 by 1. And that's that baby bear option. That is really too small for Minnesota today. That is not right for Minnesota today. But
25 by 3 is probably that just right option by Minnesota today for 6 years out for us to be able to use limited public resources to match private resources and be able to get more Minnesotans the needed, very needed, high-speed broadband that they need. So I want to thank you for your work today, and I look forward to your continued work. I know that this is the first stop. Thank you, Representative Baker, for bringing the bill forward, and I know we'll have continued conversations.
Thank you very much. We are at our time. I would love to keep it open for public testimony. A lot of people would love to talk. However, I think now is the time that I renew my motion to have House File 2381 be passed and moved to jobs as amended. All in, do you want to roll call anything? Was there a roll call put on?
It crossed my mind, Mr. Chairman, but I think I just might support this bill with the hopes that it's going to get better before it gets to the floor.
Your sentiments are mine. Okay, as amendment, all in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Thank you very much for all your patience, and I hope we did the right thing. It's a good bill, I think.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
This meeting is adjourned.